And we're back live on your number one sports podcast, All Things Sports. The round of the Sweet 16 is here for men's college hoops. MLB opening day has arrived. The Dodgers roll over the Cards. Cole Reagan has a 9-strikeout loss. And we're back to give you the real in sports. As always, I'm your co-host, Small Town AP, joined by your host, Wade Julian. The home teams today in the MLB opening day in the afternoon slate, at the very least, were 4-4. You had Detroit taking a loss among some other people. June, who you got the most surprising opening day loss as a home team? I'm sorry. Correction. Detroit won 1-0. I'm tripping. The White Sox lost. The Royals lost. The Astros lost. And the Rays lost. Sorry.
No, you're fine. I'm going to go with Houston, you know, coming into this. And I wanted to say the Marlins because, you know, Pirates, they're at home. There's a lot of excitement. This is probably the most packed that stadium is going to be all season, opening day weekend or so, unless they keep some excitement there. But, yeah, you know, the Astros, as good of a team as they are, and then as many questions that were surrounding the Yankees, you know, not having Gerrit Cole coming into opening day, Juan Soto coming into the mix and seeing how he wanted to how he was going to, you know, be able to gel with this team. I think the Yankees did a really good job today, and it's not surprising they beat the Astros, but as far as more surprising home team loss for opening day, I would definitely say Houston. I thought we would see them hang on, but Yankees got a good one late. So credit to them.
We got a young man by the name of Juan Soto who kept us out of trouble in the later innings by tying the game. I mean, the Marlins game, I don't know if I'm going to consider, I guess, yeah, it was a 4-10. It just went into 12. So the Marlins did lose at home in 12. So technically they were 4-5 in the afternoon slate. Correction on the statistician. We'll have to have a little personal meeting with that guy later on after the show. But home teams 4-5 as the Marlins do finally, I wouldn't say finally, that sounds hopeful, but do drop after 12 against the Pirates at home. I don't know, man. Tampa Bay losing in that fashion at the crib today. I know, you know, we have a consensus that the ballpark isn't the most beautiful ballpark or most alluring ballpark in the MLB to visit. But just seeing what they did and also remembering what they did last year, seeing what went down today, remembering how much of an ace Zach Eflin was last year to him getting smoked opening day at the crib. I mean, I didn't personally see that happening for them to lose to Jose Berrios, who last year was atrocious on the road. I mean, he was an absolute moneymaker fade on the road if you bet against him when he was not at home. So to see them get rocked like that, I thought was pretty alarming personally. You have any what's your second, I would say, after that, that you were like, wow, I can't believe they lost at home? You're on mute. You're on mute.
Jeez, I'm good for one of these a game, you know me. I was going to say the Marlins, you know, because, again, them playing the Pirates, I expected them to come out and be able to, you know, capitalize off strength of schedule in the first game. And they were winning late. O'Neill Cruz, shout out to O'Neill Cruz, who's one of baseball's young rising stars. He was able to hit a solo shot to tie this game up late. And, you know, they didn't look back from there as far as the Pirates. But not too surprised, honestly. Like, this is a tough question in the sense that, one, you know, it is opening day, so it's a sample size. And then, you know, a lot of the good teams also did take care of business. Like, we see, you know, the Dodgers, the Orioles, the Padres, the Reds. And the Reds took care of business in a nice fashionable way, but granted they did play a weaker Washington Nationals team. So if the Rangers lose tonight, though, I'll say this: if the Rangers lose tonight on ESPN, that would probably be the more surprising loss from a home team, because they are the defending champs. They did hoist their first franchise championship banner So that was a pretty cool thing to see at the Globe Life Stadium tonight. But they should be able to take care of business versus the Cubs. I do think, though, this Cubs team this year is going to be pretty exciting. They've been pretty underwhelming for the last few years. But
and one of those teams that took care of business today, the Baltimore Orioles opened opening day with Corbin Burnes on the mound and beating the Los Angeles Angels 11-3. Corbin Burnes did have 11 strikeouts in his Oriole debut at the crib, no walks, one earned run, which was a home run off of Trout. And, you know, Trout, that's what Trout does. He doesn't get on base much, but if he is stepping on the base, the ball's probably out of the yard. June, should we take this win over the Angels with a grain of salt?
Over the A's? Oh, over the Angels. I'm sorry.
Yeah, over the Angels. The Ohtani-less Angels.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about off air as far as, like, you know, in a sense, yes. However, at the same time, this is opening day, right? This is a chance to go 1-0 in front of your crowd. This is a chance to show off. This is a chance for Anthony Rendon to go 0-4 after making comments that he made in the offseason. But no, I think this is just it speaks to who Corbin Burnes is to the MLB. I think it also speaks to what the Orioles have built over the past few years in getting the young prospects they have, like Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, and shit like that. So shout out to the Orioles. My dad was actually texting my brother-in-law and I today, and he was like, fellas, what's y'all picks? I got Dodgers beating the Yankees in 7 in the World Series. And I'm like, okay, first of all, that's super dramatic. Second of all, no, neither of those teams are going to make the World Series. I don't know right now who's going to make the World Series, and I don't want to give – we'll do that maybe next episode. But I do think – and he pointed out that this Orioles team is going to win the East. And so I could definitely see, you know, Baltimore being there at the 100, you know, semi-win
okay
squad this year. They could be ready for that. Then it sounds crazy because – right? It's Baltimore. They're not known to have a historically great baseball franchise. It's typically been the bottom of the bucket for the AL East. And now they're like, you know, looking down at everybody laughing. And the Blue Jays, are kind of at the, it's funny. The Red Sox, I gotta be honest. The Red Sox are kind of that team right now at the bottom of the East. But it's a new day, right? It's a new day. We got a new ace. And so this season, it marks another chance for you know, the Red Sox to show some damage. And we'll talk about them another day or whenever we're ready. Maybe we'll talk about them next episode, talking about how Brian Bello's, you know, star performance over the Mariners, because he is pitching against Luis Castillo. So that is going to be a challenge in itself. But just going back to your question, yeah, I do think you take it with a bit of grain of salt as far as this 1-0 win. But, you know, the Orioles went and dominated this game, pitching at the plate. What didn't they do? So shout out to the Orioles. I'm a fan of this Orioles team. It's a young team, exciting team, and it's what baseball needs to get the new fans and the casuals kind of, you know, juiced up for the season.
Yeah, the Dirty Birds take care of business, as we call them in the gambling community. And what a great segue. Appreciate you, June. We'll just hop right into the Red Sox. They got a late slate draw tonight. They're over in Seattle playing against the Mariners. You got Bello on the mound for the Red Sox, Luis Castillo on the mound for the Mariners. We've seen both of these pitchers did last year. Luis Castillo just, you know, kind of hopped from team to team and just took care of business everywhere he went. And Bello, I feel like was a solid, you know, starter for you guys last year. He's getting into his own. I think he's a third year guy, if I'm not mistaken. This is his third year in the league and with Boston, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong. And he's gotten better, progressively better, from, you know, first year to second year. Can he get it done in the opener tonight in Seattle, June?
It'll be tough. I mean, they got some hitting over there, obviously, with the star, which is Julio Rodriguez, right? On the road, again, against a veteran all-star pitcher like Luis Castillo, who is coming from Cincinnati. You know, like, Cincinnati had all those down years, and Luis Castillo was, you know, one of the best guys on their team and stuff like that. And now they're kind of got, you know, their little excitement going, their rising star, Ellie De La Cruz over there, and Luis Castillo is on the West Coast now. But I'm sure he's happy with that. The Mariners are a playoff, you know, team. They have a good playoff chance. So I think it was a win-win for both sides. Brian Bello on the other side, you know, Bello. I'm excited. We might see some nerves. We might see some, you know, oh shit, I'm the guy right now. And that's okay, right? I'm not going to be too upset. I'm not going to look too high, too low for his opening day at, you know, 24 years old right now, pitching for the Red Sox. I think he's our youngest opening day pitcher in quite some time. So shout out to him for just, you know, putting himself in position to be able to get this opportunity, and Cora for trusting him throughout that. I do want to shout out to the guys though, Jay, Brill, Sal, what up, everybody, appreciate y'all. Sal said the Rust Belt 2.0 Marlins fitted, showing love, he knows his vibe.
Come on, man.
Yeah, man, we going to see at 10:10. I'm going to be tuning into that Red Sox Mariners. I got that MLB. Shout out to T-Mobile, first and foremost, for giving out, you know, MLB TV subscription.
Word up.
And shout out to all the shorties that hold it down for the dudes that don't have T-Mobile and willing to do their T-Mobile Tuesday and sign up and create that account for their dude, or, you know what I'm saying, homie. Appreciate y'all.
Look, the weather in Seattle, 50 degrees tonight, raining. I'm going to take a wild assumption and say they're probably going to close the dome in Seattle tonight, which for me, I think creates a perfect environment for runs. I can't get you on the side. I don't know who's going to get it done tonight. I probably would lean, you know, Castillo just a bit, but Boston ain't nothing to play with as far as that batting lineup either. They've seen Castillo a couple times, a good amount of times. He, you know, played for New York for a little bit. But 50-degree weather, raining, dome closed, runs. Take the over 7.5 tonight in Seattle. Again, I don't know who pulls it off. Don't ask me. I think it's going to be a great game. I would definitely be tuned in. Runs. Hey, look, man, take that with the grain of salt, because I called the under in Baltimore today, and I also called the over in Cincinnati in the first five, and that shit cashed. But I called the under in Baltimore opening day first bet. I'm not going to lie, I was mad confident when I hit, you know, place bet, and three runs in the first inning, and I was like, yeah, that's all she wrote right there. I didn't have to wait on it. I was like, yeah, I see where this is going. So take that with the grain of salt. The fix is in. Hey, man.
Hey, you win some, you lose more.
Hey, as long as the outcome is income, right? There you go. Let's take a look, a live look into Cubs Rangers. Cubs in Texas, in Dallas today. Top of the second, one on, no outs. One on, and it's on third. It's on the hot corner. One ball, no strikes, no outs. Nathan Eovaldi on the mound. Now he has one strike, pitching against Dansby Swanson. You think the Cubs can pull off this upset today and, you know, kind of upset their little celebration as far as hanging a banner and all that today, June? You're on mute. You're on mute.
Hey, man, sorry. For all the listeners, man, when there's that big delay and I be on mute, I be spitting my heart out, man, and I'm like, oh, all right. So I was saying that I wouldn't be surprised if the Cubs do, you know, sneak this one out. It's got to be a lot of anxiety, a lot of excitement. One, it's opening day. Two, you're coming off of this high of, you know, we got our championship banner. Let's not forget who, you know what I'm saying, who won that World Series. And as long as they're not in all over their head tonight, the Rangers should be good. But that Nerfy smack, I don't know if you were thinking about taking that or took it, but no runs first inning did hit. So if you did take the Nerfy, shout out to you. But, yeah, man, I just want to see what we saw in the World Series and a little bit before that with Marcus Semien, Corey Seager, Adolis Garcias, and now their DH, who is now starting in the MLB out of the University of Florida, drafted last June, Wyatt Langford. This is real exciting news here because they drafted him, and Bruce Bochy felt confident enough to call up this 22-year-old stud who was drafted fourth overall just last year, who shined in minor leagues, and you know he's got his opportunity right in front of him, man. He's starting on ESPN for the first time, and man, this is exciting. So shout out to Wyatt Langford for again putting himself in a position where he could be starting for the defending champion Rangers in his second year. You know, like getting to the MLB is tough enough, and to do it in your second year and get a starting lineup position in he's hitting in the four hole or so. Like, let's be for real. Maybe the five hole. I think he's hitting in the five hole.
I think this Texas Rangers team is going to be very exciting to watch, and to just see them again come off of that World Series and defend the title as they should. I think they're going to roll this bullpen, batting lineup, all phases of the game, as they say. I think they're going to roll this year. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with. There is another late game that I want to bring up. You got the Rockies playing the Diamondbacks tonight. It is a 10:10 start. Zach Gallen versus Freeland, if I'm not mistaken. Sorry to the listeners. Yes, Zach Gallen versus Kyle Freeland. Diamondbacks are 9-2 in their last 11 head-to-head with the Rockies. Does Zach Gallen continue to roll tonight, June? Or should the Diamondbacks be on home opener upset alert?
No, I think Zach Gallen is the perfect person you want on the mound in your home opener. The Rockies, you know, we don't know what we're going to get exactly from them. They've been underwhelming for the past few seasons. Nothing special. Nothing that stands out. To me, you know, ever since that era of like Trevor Story, you know, Troy Tulowitzki, those days, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nolan Arenado was
over there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's been a little, you know, down from there, and you know, the Arizona Diamondbacks are on the right, Corbin Carroll. It's exciting, and they're at home, right? I think the Diamondbacks are at home tonight. So, yeah, no way the Rockies – obviously there's a way, but no way the Rockies going to Arizona tonight and upset those Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I don't like to agree with you too much on the show, you know, so we can have some controversy. But, I mean, Kyle Freeland being 3-8 in his last 11 starts versus – the Diamondbacks and having an ERA of 5.35, 3-8 over the last 20 appearances, ERA of 5.35. It doesn't look promising at all. And honestly, when I dive in deeper into Kyle Freeland versus the Diamondbacks on the road in Arizona, 10 appearances, 2-4, 4.96 ERA. I would probably take Diamondbacks minus 1.5. Don't even watch the game. Place a ticket. Go to bed. Wake up in the morning. Get yourself a cup of coffee. All right. that'll be on ATS. Don't say we never did anything for you. Let's go over. Like I said in the intro, the Sweet 16 is here. We do have one of the games underway already. Clemson, number 6. Arizona, number 2. We are at the halftime mark. Clemson is up 8, 39-31. I mean, you said it, June. Arizona, big moments. They crumble. They fold like a bad elbow. Now you got Caleb Love, 4 points in the first half. What does Arizona have to do to turn this around in the second half and not be – I don't want to call it upset because Clemson, Power 5 team, number 6 seed. I mean, they swept North Carolina. Does North Carolina swept Duke? Clemson swept North Carolina. Shout out to y'all. What does Arizona need to do to turn this around in the second half?
I think it's about it just hitting shots. Like, you got to be able to knock down more than two, you know, three-pointers and a half, 2 of 11. I mean, Clemson only went 5 of 11, and God forbid they went over 50%. But at a 45% clip, of course they're going to be winning this game. They're shooting over 53% from the field, but Arizona's held at 40 and 18 from three. So they're also shooting only 37% from the line. So just, you got to make shots. Like, you're not going to be able to win. You guys are out-rebounding the competition. You guys have just as many assists, you know, you're losing the assist battle by just two, and the turnover battle is pretty close. 13 of 32 shooting, you know, it's not going
to get it done.
Exactly. 2 of 11 from three, you could kiss your chance goodbye. So, and then 3 of 8 from the free throw line, like, those are, that's 5 more points that you guys could, you know. So when I look at it like that, just a box score, you know, glare, it's definitely, you got to make your shots. And it's a good game still. This is still anybody's game. You know, we talked a little bit, I don't know if it was right when the game started or not when the game started, but when the pod started or just before.
Yeah, it was off air.
We were talking about, you know, hey, they're losing double digits. And, you know, it was real early. So I'm like, you know, this is something that, you know, we still have to let it play out. There's a whole half left, and they were able to close the lead to 8. But, yeah, they shoot that bad in the second half, and there is no chance at an Elite Eight opportunity for them, because I think we both think that North Carolina is going to win, and I know you really want to see this North Carolina versus Caleb Love kind of story play out. But I think that North Carolina would – I don't know why I think that Clemson would have a better opportunity against North Carolina. Maybe because it's like interconference play, or it's in conference play.
Third matchup of the season in the Elite Eight. Crazy right there.
So, but I do think that if Arizona does advance, like North Carolina, if they advance, would have a good opportunity to, you know, really, really hand it to them. So we'll see how this one closes out. If by the end of the pod, you know, they're getting down to the wire, we'll keep it updated. But as of right now, Arizona's got to hit shots.
I do think, and we'll get to the Carolina game in a second. So you know what? I'm going to walk that take back. I want to see, obviously, the world wants to see Caleb Love versus North Carolina. I don't know if Arizona necessarily wants to see, you know, Carolina at this point. I mean, they're rolling on all cylinders, man. They're clicking. It's scary. But backtrack to this current game that we're talking about, Clemson versus Arizona. I think that's what it starts with. It's just like you were saying, is hitting the shots. I mean, you're taking them. You're probably getting good looks. I'm not tapped into the game like that right now. But you got to take the good looks, and you got to make the good looks. And at this point, there's no excuses. We're not talking about November college basketball, December college basketball. You know, we're way past that. You know, we're in March, where there's little to no room for error. When I say little, I mean no. So there's no to no room for error at this point. You got to hit your shots. You got to hit your shots. And what do I say all the time, June? You definitely got to hit your free throws. Make sure you hit your free throws. The game that we'll watch after this, and after this Clemson game, and after the pod, more than likely, is UConn. They've lost once since Christmas at this point. Can any team that's left in this tournament knock UConn off, including the championship rematch that we have tonight in San Diego State against UConn, June?
Well, San Diego State's keeping it close. They're at, you know, they're only down 8 right now, 29-21. It's tough to say. I think this UConn team is the team to beat, right? This is the best team in the country, most complete team. They play very team-oriented basketball. They're shooting 44% from three at the moment, 50% from the field. Only gotten to the line once. And they're winning the rebound battle as well. winning the turnover battle, sharing the ball more. So everything is pointing to, yeah, UConn is going to move on to the Elite Eight. But that San Diego State Aztecs squad is full of dogs as well, and we can't let that go past anything. Jaden Ledee, he's got 11 points already, so he's starting off strong. However, him having 11 points and the rest of the, you know, team not having more than three, you know, anybody else having more than three, it just shows you the it shows you that, one, he's going to have to do, you know, most of the work tonight. And so to that point, Cam Spencer's got 9. Tristan Newton's got 7. Alex Caravan's got 8, right? So they're spreading the wealth in UConn. If San Diego State is going to play that one-man army ball, you know, you're going to be in for a long night in that second half. However, if they can figure it out, keep it close, and then, you know, let Ledee go ahead and take over when needed, they do have a chance. I do ultimately think UConn holds on and wins this game, moves on. But I don't think it's going to be just an easy peasy matchup. So let's stay tuned and see who comes out this second half.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely give live alerts as we get through the pod. It's tough, man. Like I said, they haven't lost since Christmas, them being UConn. And I know I talk about, or I just talked about, Clemson dominating this UConn team. Like I said, one loss since Christmas, they click and you let the game get away from you before you know you're down by 15 and they are still, you know, running their 1-2-1, 1-2-1-1, 1-2-1-3-1 and just all game, you know, standing on it, pretty much standing on business all night long. I don't know. I think it looks good for them to run it back. I mean, it looks kind of prime. It looks like it's almost destined, you know. I have a hot take about that in the second that I'll give, but, you know, we won't get there yet. San Diego State tonight, I think they'll keep it close. They need to keep it close. They need to keep it in striking distance. What you need at this point in the tournament is focus, discipline, good ball movement, and a big time player that makes big time shots and big time moments when it counts. If you keep it, doesn't help you for you to keep it close and be, you know, within 6 in the last 4 minutes, you know, last 3 minutes, and you don't got anyone that you can rely on to hit a shot. You can just give the green light to. So big time players, discipline, focus, good ball movement. I think they keep it close, but it's going to be to no avail. UConn definitely continues to the Elite Eight.
Hey, shout out to Ray. Ray agrees with you in the comments. He said, yo, back-to-back UConn. Very possible, man. This is a great team, so we'll see. But I say this, man. If Duke beats Houston tomorrow, I'm not talking and popping my shit right now because, you know, Vermont and James Madison, respectfully, great games we played against them. You know, McCain had some amazing shooting against James Madison, and we talked about it last week. We roughed them up, bullied them, and really took that win. But Houston is the number one team in the country for a long time this season, and they're going to be the biggest test that we've had since, I mean, I guess the ACC championship. However, I didn't think that was a big test. I think that we went out sad and we underachieved as far as what we did in the tournament.
Yeah.
ACC tournament, that is. So
in the quarterfinal.
If Duke does win this game right now, you know, I'm still kind of like humble. I do think there's a chance, there's a way, there's a formula. Houston's a great team and it's not going to be easy. But if they do, just know we off. Like, we are going to the Final Four.
Let's go.
We are going to the national championship. And Coach Shire might just, you know, might just. But it's not even Friday yet.
It's not.
It's not Friday night yet. You know what it's I'm saying? Not. We still got a whole 25 hours and change until this game tips off.
It is.
Let's root for our guys. You know what I'm saying? We're gonna root for the Duke Blue Devils and hope they can find some of that same offensive success that they've had versus Vermont and versus James Madison.
Absolutely. I was talking about big time players and big time moments, and I guess we'll transition over from Duke to Carolina. Armando Bacot and company, That's a big time player on a big time team. They play Alabama tonight. Out of all the matchups, to me personally, it looks like the easiest. I think that Carolina should roll through the Tar Heels. Wow. Through Roll Tide. Is this the easiest matchup in this round, June? Is Carolina just stepping to the Elite Eight at this point?
I don't know. I mean, look at the matchups. Like, I think Illinois-Iowa State is a good matchup, you know? I think UConn-San Diego State is a good matchup. Teams that know each other. Creighton-Tennessee. Like, so as far as, like, one-sided, is that more so your question? Like, UNC should be able to put this one in the bag early.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
looking at it from a bird's eye view, I do see why you could feel that way. And it's going to be either that one or Marquette versus NC State. And we're either going to see the NC State from the ACC tournament that was able to beat Duke and beat North Carolina, or we're going to see the NC State that we saw all season, right, and was inconsistent. And Marquette will come out. Coach Shaka Smart have his guys ready, and I believe they got that guy. I forgot what his number was, but boy was going crazy. So I would say between UNC, Alabama, and NC State, Marquette. Ironically, both North Carolina teams.
Are they baiting us into a Duke and Carolina national championship?
Hey, man, look. Let's
Josh Shire, second
25 year. Hours. In 25 hours and change, we got Houston. And, you know, I think that is going to say a lot about where this season will go. And it's either going to be back home or it's going to the Final Four, going to the national championship, and not caring who we play.
Hey, going into the bottom of the third, the Cubs are on top 1-0 in Texas right now. So we'll let you know as that unfolds. I know you were mentioning we got Houston tomorrow, we being Duke. North Carolina State Marquette, early 7:09 game tomorrow, June. Number 11 versus number 2. Again, North Carolina State, the highest seed still remaining. They will be playing in the South region, American Airlines Center, Dallas, Texas. Marquette -6.5, a total at 151.5. So saying it's going to be a pretty high scoring game. June, who you got winning tomorrow in this North Carolina State Marquette game?
Yeah, I got Marquette. No shade, no hate. This is no...
You just muted yourself halfway through here.
No, man, NC State. I'm going to go NC State. Sorry. See, I said what I said. I was muted and I messed up. I mean, Marquette. I think Marquette pulls away tomorrow. NC State has had a hell of a run. They went from, you know, mediocre, their coach Kevin Keats almost getting fired in the season, to a Sweet 16 bid, right? And so they've already overachieved for what it's worth. They've kind of met their match, in my opinion, here with Marquette. And, yeah, I this is no shade, no hate from the ACC tournament or anything like that. Marquette is just a really well-put-together, well-coached squad. And I don't know that NC State has an answer.
Yeah, I think the proverbial, I know Kevin, shout out to Kev, was saying, you know, North Carolina State definitely a Cinderella. I think that story does end tomorrow versus this Marquette team. I think they're just too sharp, too fine-tuned at this point. Well, we're probably going to watch Marquette roll early. I know last pod I said, you know, maybe you take NC State after further deliberation. Marquette -6.5. That 6.5 range where you're in, you know, two possessions, Vegas is telling you something, the line is telling. I think, like you mentioned, I think it's going to get ugly early. I got to backtrack a little because I missed one game tonight that you did mention, Illinois Illini versus Iowa State. Who you got in the late game tonight, June?
I'm not gonna lie, this one I'm looking at it, I'm like, damn, I can't call it. This is a pretty even matchup, much like that Creighton and Tennessee game. I'm not sure. I think whoever the better team comes out tomorrow will win. And obviously, like, sounds obvious, but these are two really good teams. I don't have any chips either way, and so I'm excited to just see a good game. This will probably be one of the more competitive games, one of the down-to-the-wire games, exciting, you know, Sweet 16 matchup. So let's just look to enjoy this one, and let's see who comes out victorious.
Yeah, I don't think I can tell you who wins, who loses. I'll tell you what I got. I got the over, right? Shout out to 909. Did my own little cap. I said, you know what? It's already raised mad points. I'm going to just buy it down to the 144 and a half at minus 130. Shout out to my bookie. I wouldn't play it at the 147 that it is now. It's a bit too high for my liking, but I do like the over 144 and a half. People are saying defense. I'm saying, who's going to stop Illinois at this point? I'm not going to lie. Those guys are rolling. They're scoring. They're scoring at a very alarming rate. I know Iowa State, you know, is known for that defense, but give me the over. It's going to be a high-scoring game, late-night game. Stay up for this one for sure. We'll go over to the NBA, where Draymond Green ejected under 4 minutes. I mean, that's the highlight story. I don't even think that part of the story is the biggest part of the story. I think at this point, his teammate's reaction, a specific teammate by the name of Steph Curry, and just the, you know, utter frustration that was on his face should be highlighted at this point. You just give him an extension. So I guess you logically can't move on from Draymond Green, but should the Warriors start maybe looking at moving on from Draymond Green at this point, if he can't control his antics, June?
I would like to preface my answer with saying that this was Draymond Green's 19th career regular season ejection. That is second most in NBA history. And he is behind the great Rasheed Wallace, who has 25. Shout out to Rasheed Wallace for getting to that number 25. Because and we remember Rasheed Wallace. And I remember what he brought to the Pistons.
Throwing the headband.
Hey, I know how important he was for them to win the championship that they won, for them to get as deep in the playoffs as they did, for them to compete as hard as they did. Rasheed Wallace was a driving factor night in, night out. Tell me I'm wrong in the comments if I'm lying. With that being said, I do not think the Warriors and Draymond should be looking towards any type of breakup. I think Draymond Green, for what he's done for the franchise in years past and to this day, more importantly, is extremely valuable. We're talking about a guy who's a glue guy. We're talking about a guy who's a cerebral guy. We're talking about a guy who gets his guys in positions, makes other players better, understands how to play with Steph Curry, facilitate, get him open, get him in his good spots, pause. But, you know, having said all of that now, I saw a tweet earlier. It was like, Coach Carter's the only guy who could check this guy right now, who could only get him a check. It's just like, what's it going to give, you know, for Draymond? Because, goddamn, bro, like, they've cut you so much slack in Golden State, right? You've gone through the suspensions. You've gone through the, you know, outbursts. You've gone through the locker room altercations or practice altercations. And so, again, we have Draymond Green here on his podcast talking about how he can be better, like, and how maybe he shouldn't have this, that, and the third. And so I understand the frustration on a guy like Steph Curry when you are trying to win this game, because every game matters. We spoke about this last week, where the Rockets are on their ass at the 10 seed and the Warriors are fighting to stay there, but also understanding that, hey, we need every game right now, much like the Lakers do, much like the Rockets are trying to do, and much like every other team that wants to avoid this play-in or at least make the play-in we need to win all these late games. So there's only 12 to 13 more games left in the season. So I feel Steph Curry. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's got to be super frustrating for a guy like Draymond Green, you know, getting ejected career high fourth time this season. And this was 3.5 minutes into the game. Like, you're not even giving yourself a chance at that point. Fortunately, they were able to pull off a win versus the Magic, who the Magic themselves are fighting to stay in that, you know, 6, 7, 8 seed. So very interesting stuff here. What I was mentioning to my friend earlier was like, how does or why does the NBA officials speak so proper? Why do they? So there's a quote here. It says, crew chief Mitchell Irvin told a pool reporter after the game that Green was given the second technical foul because, quote, a prolonged diatribe, Green directed, egregious, profane, vanguard towards a game official. So he cursed him out. That's basically what he's saying. But the fact that he had to say it like that was pretty funny. Again, to answer your question, no, the Warriors and Draymond Green are kind of a match made in heaven. If you really think about it, this guy's a four-time champion, multi-time. He's a defensive player of the year. So he means way too much. And just because a guy has 19 regular season ejections, doesn't mean he has 25.
I like that. I like that. You know what this kind of like seems to me at this point is it's a job. Like, you're working, you know, and look, listen, don't get this misconstrued. I'm all about a man not standing for disrespect. If you're at work and someone's disrespecting you, you know what I'm saying? Definitely stand up for yourself. Be a man. Don't let that rock. Now, I'm not saying that the refs are like his boss, you know? He doesn't necessarily work for the refs. But during a game, I would think of the ref as maybe like a shift lead, you know? Maybe like maybe assistant to the assistant manager. You know what I mean? A lead, if I may, right? Sales floor lead. And you're not going to just be mouthing off to your lead because he told you, yo, go take your break on time or like take your break early for me because I need you on, you know, It might not be the boss. It might not be, you know, the boss, the CEO of the company. But in that moment, they're managing the game. And you should probably, treat them as such. I'm not saying they make the right calls because we've gone over this a bunch of times this season. They don't make the right calls. They don't make the call sometimes that needs to be made. They make the wrong call. They don't see things that are clearly visible, you know. So I get it. I'm sure the frustration has culminated, but the repeat offending, it just has to stop. Again, they just give them an extension, so I don't see them moving on. But you know what? I do want to ask you this. Evco from the Unsportsmanlike podcast, shout out to ESPN. It's not a paid sponsorship, but fuck with us, you heard. They probably won't after an ad like that, though. Anyway, Evco reported earlier today. He was clear speculation. He said this is clearly speculating. He has no idea if this is true or not. But he says that he wouldn't be surprised if the Warriors in the past have already tried to move on from Draymond. And Steph Curry was like, hey, wait a second, you can't do that. We need that guy. He is part of this championship formula, you know. And at this point, it doesn't seem like Steph Curry still has the same, I don't want to say feeling, but I'm sure he understands the importance that Draymond, like you said, match made in heaven, that he is for that team. But it doesn't seem like sentiments and feelings are different. I don't know. He probably doesn't have the same sentiment at this point in his career. How do you feel about that? Do you think that weight holds true, or do you think that he was just very, very frustrated last night and might have let his emotions show a little more than he usually does?
Yeah, I think the latter, you know, is probably more accurate. It's also human, right? Like, Steph Curry is one of the biggest competitors this league has seen, right? And we call him the babyface assassin, not because he has a baby face, but because he is an assassin. Like, the man want to kill you. The man want to embarrass you, and he does. So him having that competitive spirit, obviously when he sees this guy go down for something that maybe could have been handled different, maybe it was a little immature, whether he was mad at the ref for even throwing him out. We don't know exactly what was going through his mind right there. But I think the important thing is to know, and Steph knows this, much like you just mentioned, when they did try to move on from Draymond Green, who stepped in the way of that? Stephen Curry. If they move on from Draymond Green, which is a possibility, and it's not impossible in my opinion, it has to be for the right price. It has to be for something of great value, in a, you know, what you're getting for Draymond Green aspect. It has to be great value and something that can continue to keep you in a playoff push and in a competitive, I guess, standard. Because if they get rid of Draymond and just, you know, for picks or for some young guy, it's like, okay, what are we doing now? And where do we see this going with Steph? Well, where's our direction? Are we trying to win still? And there's a lot of other questions that are going to have to be answered behind the Draymond Green trade. So this is also why Bob Myers stepped down as GM, because you get in, you know, buy low and sell high. Is that the quote?
Absolutely.
And he did an amazing job at that. And so the next 5 years for this Golden State Warriors franchise is going to be extremely interesting, seeing the older guys, you know, move out or trying to move them out, because you don't know if, you know, you probably want to keep Steph Curry for life. Klay Thompson is going to have to take a pay cut or two if he really wants to stay. Draymond Green, what are we going to do? Something's got to give. So, but right now, I think that the best option is that they keep him and they continue to try to figure it out. They, in my opinion, can win. I mean, the Nuggets, we saw the Nuggets, you know, skyrocket back up to first place like I thought they would be here.
Yes, sir.
And their, I think their best matchup would probably be a team like the Thunder. So if they were able to get that sixth seed, which I don't see happening, or that sixth seed, I don't see happening, it's going to be tough. I think this is a first-round exit if they do lose. But they might not make the playoffs or the play-in, because the Rockets, as I mentioned last week, are on their ass. They're still only one game out of 10th place. And Jalen Green, again, last night went for, I think, 37-7-5 on 50% shooting, 7 of 11 from the three-point line. And they are – the Rockets and the Mavericks are combined 11-0, I think 12-0 now with the win last night, ever since Pornhub was banned in the state of Texas. So
– oh, wow.
The boys is locked in.
Pornhub was banned in the state of
shout
Texas?
Shout out to Reddit. Shout out to what's his name? ShamWowGuy18.
Hey, yo, that's a wild ban. yeah, you know what? On that note, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, as we cross the 48-3 minute mark, this has been your Thursday night All Things Sports podcast, Sweet 16, March Madness, MLB, opening day, Draymond out of the game, all of that. Episode. If you tune in on the live, I do want to tap back in. Night Shift Lou shouting out Florida. What up, G's? Brillin, they're saying anger management for Draymond ain't do nothing. And Strictly, shout out to Strix.
Yeah.
He said, get some picks for Draymond. They can start rebuilding in the future. Hey, man, that guy, as we just said, he is the foundation, really. It's weird to say. It's weird to think about, but he's the foundation. The moment that Draymond leaves, I'm a firm believer that they are blowing most of it up. And I mean, shit, Steph Curry might be retiring at that point. But we'll see. This has been your Thursday night episode. Again, if you tune in on the live, took time out of your day on this beautiful.
Thank you. I appreciate y'all.
Absolutely. Thank you. You could have been anywhere in the world. If you're tuned in after the fact on all streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, Google. If you're watching the YouTube live, you know, rewatch. Thank you so much. We did have some technical difficulties with the switching of the date. So it does say the 25th, but today is the 28th. And we will see you on Monday. Thank you.